Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 108 event, which takes place in Nashville, Tennessee. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we won 4 units for UFC on Fox 24 after going 1-0 with our premium bets. We won a straight play on underdog Renato Moicano, and we did not have any free bets. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 108 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 2, and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a flyweight contest between Hector Sandoval, who is 13-3, and Matt Schnell, who is 10-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up at Schnell, minus 135, the comeback on Sandoval at minus 105. Right now, over at FiveDimes.eu, our sponsored sportsbook, it is currently Sandoval, minus 120. The comeback on Schnell is at even money, so early action has flipped the line a little bit. It started near Pick'em with Schnell being the early lean. Right now, it's near Pick'em with Sandoval being the early lean, so my guess is it'll stay around a Pick'em type of price. A lot of split opinions on this fight, and a lot of two-way action as well, even though the early action is favoring Sandoval a little bit here. It's a good fight. I mean, styles make fights, and this definitely should be a fun one to watch. Of course, in the flyweight division, most are, because these guys are so talented. They got speed, they got power, they got technique in most cases, and this fits along that line as well. I think overall, Schnell is, I think, the better offensive fighter, meaning, or the better, more well-rounded fighter, the flashier fighter a little bit. I think he's more well-known for his grappling game. I mean, the guy's definitely offensively a stud on the ground. I mean, his jiu-jitsu is pretty hard to deal with. I mean, he's always attacking with submissions. He's always scrambling well. I mean, he's just a threat on the ground. He's only a purple belt in BJJ, I believe, but he's higher level than just your average purple belt. So Schnell, his ground game is something to really watch and enjoy, really. I mean, the guy is dangerous, like I said, in all parts of the game. Now, for Sandoval, he's more well known for his striking ability. He does have some wrestling. He does have some good takedown defense as well. Obviously, he's from Team Alpha Male, so he's got a lot of what the blueprint for those fighters is as well. Kind of a short, stocky, powerful, good wrestler. He could choke you. You know, he's got those guillotine chokes. He's just your prototypical alpha male fighter. He's getting better. He's getting a little bit more respect now. His win over Serrano in his last fight was definitely more up to par than his UFC debut against Hayes. So we've seen some flashes from Sandoval, and the guy is really good. In his matchup with Schnell, though, it's going to be tough for both fighters. I mean, that's why it's a pick'em type of fight. Sandoval's key to victory here is keeping off his back and trying to work his footwork and movement, his speed, to land heavy shots against Schnell. Now, Schnell, if there's any kryptonite to his game at all, it is he's a little bit susceptible. He's been rocked in fights. And now, of course, he came off of a knockout loss for this fight in his UFC debut at a higher weight class. And it didn't really work out for him so well. He was doing okay in his fight against Font, but Font was just proved to be a little bit too strong, too powerful for him, and got the job done. But before that fight, even fighting in his natural weight class at flyweight, Schnell has been rocked in other fights as well. So his chin is a little bit concerning, and a guy like Sandoval could definitely test that chin. But overall, I think Schnell's tough enough and he's savvy enough that he could probably survive some of the exchanges. I think as far as reach goes and striking ability, actually, Schnell could have an advantage here. I think he's going to be the more consistent, busier fighter on the feet. I think he's going to be landing the shots as well. And again, I believe he's got like a 6-inch reach advantage where when it comes to height and a pure reach as well. So he's got some advantages in this fight. So this is a tough one for me to pick because I can see Sandoval kind of keeping it upright and again, using his speed and footwork and landing the harder shots, where I can see Schnell being a little bit more active, pushing a little bit of a higher pace and being more of a threat to finish the fight along the way, even with his ground game as well. So tough one, kind of a head scratcher type of fight, but as it stands right now, I have to lean a little bit more towards Schnell. I just think he has a little bit more to offer. He's going to be a little bit more confident dropping back down to his, you know, his weight class that he should be at flyweight. And I think we're going to see some good things for him. So should be a fun fight to start off the night, but I lean a little bit more towards Schnell in this one.
Yeah, this fight's tricky. Schnell is a very talented young fighter, but man, the UFC didn't do any favors for him in his debut with the promotion, fighting up a weight class against a really talented banger in Rob Font, who put his lights out. That's not exactly the way you want to start out your UFC professional career, and Schnell definitely has some ground to gain to get back in that confidence that he had. Now, Hector Sandoval, it's not an easy fight here either. Sandoval looked rock solid in his last fight against Freddy Serrano. I mean, Serrano was a, you know, Olympic level wrestler, and Sandoval was able to pressure him. He was the better striker. He just did all the right things in that fight and was able to win a decision. And if he's able to do that against Schnell, I think he's going to be in a good position to win the fight. Now, Schnell is going to have several monster advantages here. I mean, 6 inches in reach, 6 inches in height. Sandoval is definitely more of a stocky striker, so he's going to have to close that distance and potentially leave himself a little bit exposed to try to land those big shots, because that's his best path to victory. Sandoval has a lot of power. He swings hard. And Schnell is a little bit more susceptible to getting hurt on the feet. So if Sandoval can get things going with the stand-up, and if he can close that distance and explode forward and land some big bombs, then there's a really good chance that he can win. But if Schnell can keep his distance, or if Schnell can kind of get his ground game going a little bit too, then he has a good path to victory. So I think this is a very evenly matched fight. But I'm going to kind of lean with the fighter that has a little bit more momentum behind him. And I think Sandoval can pressure Schnell enough on the feet that Schnell will be a little bit concerned about that big knockout blow coming. And that could make him a little extra passive. So I think Sandoval can get the job done. So I'm going to lean with him. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Brian Barberina, who is 12-4, taking on Joe Proctor, who is 11-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Barberina -260, the comeback on Proctor at +180. Right now, over five dimes, is Barberina -320. The comeback on Proctor is +260. So line has been bet up a little bit. More action coming in Barberina's way. Not really surprised by this either, because, I mean, let's face it, Barberina is one of these guys that is just a tough, hard nose fighter that, man, he just pushes a high pace. You just can't get him out of there. His relentless style. He's gained a lot of respect from all of us that are UFC fans or MMA fans since his debut, honestly. I mean, they gave him nothing but stud opponents, and the guy has upset quite a bit, quite a few of them. I mean, you're talking about Warley Alves that he upset. Even his fight against Covington was a bit of a surprise, because Covington even struggled in the wrestling aspect against Barberina there too, but he did have a loss there. But before that, of course, he beat Sage Northcutt. He has a win over Ellenberger's brother, Joe, as well. So he's had some solid competitors that he's had to face, and he came through, like I said, in most cases with flying colors. And even despite his losses, he's actually fared well and at least put on a good showing there. So you know what you're getting with Barberina. He's not going to quit on you. I mean, he comes to win, and he's just tough out. But the problem with Barberina that I have, he's not really a great striker. He's not really a great wrestler. He doesn't really have anything that's going to overwhelm you as far as offensive technique, but he does have a little bit of power. And again, he's got the heart and the will to push forward, and that a lot of times will do the job. Against Proctor, it's going to be a tough matchup, because I think Proctor is a little bit more talented, pure MMA skill wise. I mean, I think Proctor probably is the more technical striker on the feet. I think Proctor is the better jiu-jitsu artist underground as well. Probably has better wrestling to go along with it, but will he be able to implement some of his style against Barberina? I don't think he will. I don't think that Proctor is going to be able to just manhandle Barberina on the ground. I think Barberina is going to be able to get back up if Proctor even does get him down, and then make this fight play out on the feet. We're on the feet. Even if Proctor is having a little bit of success, I still think that Barberina's toughness is going to overwhelm him. And I think eventually he can clip Proctor and possibly put him out, or he's going to be pushing a high enough pace back at Proctor as the fight progresses that he's going to probably win on the scorecards. So I get why everybody is kind of leaning more towards Barberina. I am as well. I think even though I've been a fan of Proctor in previous fights, and he's actually made me some cash, in this matchup here, I got to kind of stay away, because I don't trust him quite as much against a hard, gritty type of fighter like Barberina. I think Barberina is going to come away with a win, so I'm going to lean his way.
One thing of note is Barberina has fought his last, I believe, four fights outside the lightweight division, starting with Sage Northcutt, and then Warley Alves, and then Colby Covington. So this guy has gotten a little bit used to not having to cut a lot of weight, and he is dropping back down to the lightweight division after he got bullied a little bit by Covington in his last fight. So that is one thing to keep an eye on. This could be a tough weight cut for Barbarina. Now, Proctor, he's not exactly an explosive-style athlete. He's a little bit more slow and plodding, but he's got a lot of strength. He has a solid ground game. You know, he's one of Joe Lozon's sparring partners, so he kind of has that Lozon ability to go for submissions, and he does have some pop in his hand, so Barbarina will have to be a little bit cautious, but for the most part, Barbarina is just so scrappy and tough that he makes up for all his deficiencies with this kind of stick-to-itiveness. He just goes after his opponents, and he has so much heart. And one thing I do think Barbarina is mildly elite with is in the clinch, he's actually kind of ferocious there. He throws good elbows if he can get his opponent backed into the fence, good knees, good dirty boxing. So if Barbarina can kind of gain a little bit of momentum, if he senses even any weakness whatsoever from Proctor, that's kind of where he pounces. And he is the type of fighter that gets stronger as the fight goes on and takes advantage of his opponent's weaknesses in cardio and heart. And that's what helped him pull off those monster upsets against Alves and Northcutt. And I honestly think that this fight is a huge step down for him. So as long as his weight cut goes well, Barbarina should just overwhelm Proctor at some point. Although the first round will probably be close. Second and third rounds, I think Barbarina wins them easy, and he probably gets a finish at some point. So my pick is going to be Barbarina. Now moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims, we have a women's bantamweight contest between Alexis Davis, who is 17-7, and Cindy Dandois, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Davis, minus 215, the comeback on Dandois at plus 165. Right now, it's Davis minus 270, the comeback on Dandois is at plus 230 at 5 dimes. So a little bit more action coming in Davis's way. Dandois hasn't really been – it's hard to explain with her. I don't know. I mean, I've never been really – I want to say that's big of a fan as far as her fighting style goes, because it's almost – I don't know. I don't want to disrespect her too much, but it's almost irritating at times, I guess, the way she goes about stuff, because she's obviously has a lot of decent experience. I mean, she's had some quality performances in Invicta too, which is obviously a pretty established and well-respected organization, especially for the ladies out there. So it's not like she's, you know, facing garbage competition along the way and not doing well. She's performing really decent. In fact, better than expected. It's just the way she goes about it, I guess. It's just she's slow. I mean, on the feet, she has a long way to go still. I mean, even with her experience through the years, she still has to develop her striking game a lot better than what it is. I mean, her game really evolves around her getting the fight to the ground. And once she's on the ground, that's where it gets interesting, because she is definitely a talent, to say the least, on the ground, especially offensively. I mean, she manages, even though she doesn't have really good wrestling or takedown ability, she manages to get the fight to the floor, whether it's her little head arm throws or her trip takedowns. Or whatever the case may be, she's a little bit stronger and has the technical ability to get the fight to the ground more times than we think. So it's just very weird and strange with her, because you wouldn't really expect it. But once on the ground, I mean, make no mistake, she is highly dangerous. She knows what she's going after. She usually progresses to get position first and then starts either dropping a decent ground and pound, which could be very effective, or looking for the sub. And more times than not on the ground, she's able to get the job done. So she's a very dangerous and capable fighter when the fight hits the floor. Davis, though, stylistically should be a tough matchup, because obviously she has a grappling background as well. Her striking ability is far ahead of Dandois right now. I mean, if she keeps this fight upright, she should be able to torch Dandois on the feet. I think with her speed, with her power, with her accuracy, I mean, with her overall technique, she shouldn't have many problems. The problem is, we all know that Davis obviously had some time off, had a child that came back, didn't look that great against McMahon. I mean, styles make fights, and McMahon was obviously a tough matchup for her. I don't know if Dandois can have the same type of success here. I doubt she can. But outside of that, I mean, Davis is just the better fighter. Even on the ground, I wouldn't be surprised if Davis is able to submit Dandois there either. But I think that's the case for either fighter. On the ground, they should neutralize each other out, and they're both dangerous enough that they could probably hit a sub on each other. I mean, I respect Davis's submission defense just a little bit more than Dandois on the ground as well. But I mean, once it gets to the ground, I'm expecting a lot of high-level jiu-jitsu, a lot of scrambles, a lot of just high-level stuff overall, I mean, it is going to be a fun fight to watch if it does hit the floor. But will it hit the floor? Will Davis let it hit the floor? I'm not so sure. So I do agree with the early action coming in Davis's way, but this is kind of a sleeper fight. I would not really lay over 2-1, to be honest with you, in this fight, because it's just a strange one. I think stylistically it might be a good fight for Dan Wall as well. I mean, if she's able to get Davis on the floor and get top position, she will have some success. So kind of a head scratcher, especially making her UFC debut. I would think that the UFC almost wants some new blood, you know, coming into the bantamweight division and making some waves. So a win over Davis would be a huge notch on her resume. But will she get it? I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm kind of scratching my head. I don't think she does, but I think maybe we're all underestimating her a little bit, and she has more success in this fight than we think. But with all that being said, it's still hard to pick against Davis, because I know clearly that she should be the better fighter here. So I'm going to go her way. I just wouldn't bet it. So for those out there, this is kind of my caution. Even though it seems too good to be true with, you know, Davis should roll here in this fight, it's kind of a head scratcher, and I would probably stay away from betting this fight. But my pick is going to be Davis.
Dandwa is intriguing because of some of the wins she's pulled off. I mean, her MMA career debuted with a fight against Marla Skunin, and she did great in that fight. And then more recently, she beat Megan Anderson, who's currently the Invicta women's featherweight champ. So, I mean, she definitely has a solid ground game to fall back on. But, I mean, that's kind of Alexis Davis's bread and butter. Now, Davis did not look her best in her last fight. She returned after like a 19-month layoff due to pregnancy, and she just got overwhelmed by Sarah McMahon, got submitted for the first time in her career. So that's a little bit scary, especially because she's facing one of the better submission fighters she's fought in the UFC. So Dandwa definitely could pull this off if this fight goes to the ground and there's some intriguing scrambles, and if Dandwa can get things going on the canvas. But that being said, one thing Alexis Davis does have going for her big time is she is definitely the better striker. Dandwa is not very good on the feet. She doesn't have any power to speak of. She's not very technical. And as we've seen, Alexis Davis can just fall back on a decent kickboxing game. I mean, she did that against Liz Carmouche, basically just jabbed her in the face for 3 straight rounds and won a decision. So if a push comes to shove, Davis can just keep this fight standing and win a decision that way, maybe even score a TKO, because Dandwa really is not going to offer much, and Davis might be able to put a little more extra zip on her punches. So if it goes to the ground, it'll be competitive, but on the feet, this is a blowout. So I got to take Alexis Davis. Now, dropping down to the women's strawweight division for the FS2 prelims, we have Jessica Penne, who is 12-5. Taking on Danielle Taylor, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Penne, -230, the comeback on Taylor, +170. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it has been bet down. Penne is -145 right now at the time of the recording, and Taylor is +125. So action continues to come in on Taylor as the underdog. I am a bit surprised here. Obviously, I opened it a little bit higher, thinking that the overall public opinion would be that Penne is just going to be a little bit too much for Taylor at this point, as far as experience goes, as far as ability goes, as far as length goes. I mean, Penne was just recently fighting for the strap at 115 pounds, for crying out loud. Now, I mean, she got beat up in that fight, but that being said, throughout her career, she's faced good competition. She has an impressive resume, to say the least. And I mean, she's just a good overall fighter, especially her ground game. I mean, that's where Penne's best attributes are, for sure, is on the ground. But on the feet, she's got a little bit of length. She pushes forward. She has the ability to score, obviously, on the feet as well. But the problem with her is she doesn't have that overwhelming power, the knockout power, to do a ton of damage on the feet. And with her length at times, I mean, she does leave some openings, and a fighter like Taylor could definitely step in and close that gap and make life interesting for her. I think that's why everybody's coming in here and honestly favoring Taylor a little bit more in this fight, because I think they're looking at Penne where she's just kind of on her way down, maybe past her prime. Obviously, she's 35 years old. She's already fought for the title. She's had some tough fights. I mean, that Andrade fight and her last fight was just brutal for her. I mean, it definitely was. So I get it. And if you look at it, Taylor, even though she's not Andrade, she's a similar stature. You know what I mean? She's the type of fighter that's a short, stocky fighter that can do some damage on the feet as well. So I think a lot of people are thinking that it's going to be the same way. Probably not as dominant as Andrade was against Penne, but still a similar type of matchup. So I think that's why everybody's coming in on Taylor. But I'm not so sure. I don't know. This is a tough one for me, because I do respect Taylor. She's man, I mean, honestly, she's short, explosive, powerful, fast, dangerous, good takedown defense, good footwork on the feet. There's a lot to like about her. I mean, if she had a little bit more size, she'd be scary at this weight class for sure. And she still is. I mean, I have a ton of respect for her, but I think Penne's still a little bit farther ahead of her. And what bothers me about Taylor sometimes is, I mean, because she has to make up that, you know, the reach disadvantage at times, she ends up being on her back foot a little bit with her movement footwork, which I did say was really good. And she's able to avoid a lot of punishment being taken. But on the scorecards, you're just not sure how that's going to get scored. I mean, if Penne's sitting there pushing a pace, she's moving forward. She's throwing, even though Taylor is landing a little bit cleaner at times, Penne's aggression might actually win her the fight on the feet a little bit. And then if it does hit the floor, obviously Penne's going to have a huge advantage over Taylor on ground as well. Even with her length, I think it helps her tremendously in this spot against Taylor if it does get to the floor. But it's going to be hard for Penne to get it to the floor, so we'll see how that plays out. But either way, even if it stays standing, I mean, I think Penne, just by with her aggressiveness, by her pushing forward a little bit, she could still have some success against Taylor. She just has to be careful to not get that, you know, take that knockout blow, or, you know, take some body shots and then open up some other things as she goes. She has to fight smart if it stays standing. So that's yet to be determined, obviously. But with all being said, I was kind of thinking early on Taylor might be a live dog here, and she possibly is, but it seems like she's everybody's favorite dog here in this spot. So I'm going to go against the grain, and I'll pick Penne here to win the fight. I still think she has a little bit left in the tank. And honestly, where they are right now, Penne is the better fighter. Now, does that mean she's going to come up with a win? We'll see. I don't know about that, especially right now. I think she is in a bit of a decline. But that being said, it's hard to bet against her or pick against her at this spot, I think, right now where the line is, because I think Penne is the better fighter, so I'm going to go her way.
Danielle Taylor definitely has the power to turn this fight on its head at any instant, but she can be really frustrating fighter. I mean, in her UFC debut, she just moved backwards the entire time against Marina Moroz and just looked for that home run shot the entire time, and it never really came. It was just a really frustrating fight. She also has pretty good wrestling ability, but, I mean, if she tries to take down Jessica Penne, she's going to get tied into a pretzel. Panay's ground game still, to me, is one of the best in all of the women's strawweight division. So if she can get this fight to the floor, I don't care who you are, she has a really good chance to submit you or at least win a decision. Look no further than one of Panay's first fights in the UFC against Randa Marcos. Marcos is on a nice little run right now, but Penne did a great job of getting that fight to the ground and getting dominant positions, taking her back and threatening with submissions, and she was able to win a decision. So if Penne can get the ground game flowing against Taylor, then she should win easily. Another thing, though, Penne has a 7-inch reach advantage. She's 5 inches taller. I mean, we've said this time and time again, but Taylor is a fighter that is made for the atomweight division, but it just doesn't exist in the UFC yet. So she's kind of being forced to fight outside her weight class. I mean, Penne actually fought atomweight, and she was the Invicta atomweight champ, but I mean, she's fought at strawweight a lot in her career, and she has at least the size to compete in that division by adding a little more bulk to her frame. So even though Penne isn't a great striker, she does have a decent jab, and she is capable of fighting long. And if she can fight long, I mean, she could just get a little bit of damage in on the feet and win some exchanges with Taylor, because Taylor does just kind of look for that big bomb. She's not really a fighter that just stands toe-to-toe with her opponent. Now, another thing that's intriguing here is, you know, Penne, as even though she's a decent distance striker, she's not a very good brawler. I mean, when people pressure her and force her, you know, to back up and just throw down and kind of bite down on her mouthpiece, that's where she gets herself in a lot of trouble. You saw that when she couldn't get the takedowns against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. You saw that when Jessica Andrade just blitzed her. So if Taylor can really go for it and just go after her, then she has a decent chance. But if Taylor's passive and looking for that big shot, I think Penne can win on the feet. And then if Penne can get this to the ground, I think there's no doubt that she'll win the fight. So I gotta lean Penne just because she has a couple more ways to win, but don't discount Danielle Taylor's power. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Scott Holtzman, who is 9-2. Taking on Michael McBride, who is 8-2. Now, Nick,
Where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up at Holtzman, -350, the comeback on McBride, +250. Right now over five dimes, it's -345 for Holtzman. McBride is +285. There has been two-way action coming into this fight. It's been bouncing up and down a little bit. So it seems about right, and I think it's going to probably settle around this mark as well, about 3-1, maybe most 4-1, somewhere around that ballpark here. I mean, McBride just isn't going to get a ton of respect. I mean, even if in his UFC debut on short notice against Nick Lentz, he didn't get a ton of respect. Now, part of it was being short notice. Part of it that he was just outmatched and outclassed. And I think a lot of the same things can be said here. Of course, he's got a longer training camp for this one against Holtzman, but still, it's an uphill battle for him. I mean, if you look at what McBride does best, it's obviously his ground game. I mean, he is pretty slick on the ground. He's got some length to go along with it for the lightweight division, which you like to see. But can he out-wrestle Holtzman, get him to the ground, and utilize his ground game on the floor, which is, like I said, sneaky good at times. I mean, McBride could definitely – he is a threat on the ground. You can't take him lightly at all. And he does train with the likes of Jeremy Stevens and other training partners that are solid for him, and it's going to make him better for sure. And Holtzman, of course, training with the crew over at the lab, which is really coming on. I think it's one of the better gyms, one of the better camps that we've seen the last couple of years, and they're just getting bigger and better. So he has a ton of great training partners as well. So both these guys are in established camps and getting good training, and they're going to keep on improving overall. I think McBride is probably better than what we saw against Nick Lentz, obviously. He was exhausted after that first round. I mean, just the pace that Nick Lentz set, I mean, of course it was going to do that to him with all the scrambling and transitions, everything that went on in that fight and the beating that he took. I think he's going to fare a little bit better against Holtzman, but Holtzman's a similar type of fighter to Nick Lentz in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously a little bit different, but Holtzman has some good wrestling. I think he has the better stand-up here, edge over McBride, at least on the feet. I think he's faster. I think he's going to push a higher pace overall. And on the ground, I think that Holtzman actually can hold his own enough where he's not going to get probably caught up in a sub or lose scrambles against McBride that often. So it's really a tough fight for McBride, even though I think McBride is a dangerous fighter and probably a little bit underrated. I still think that we're going to see improvements made from Holtzman. And so far, I don't think he's even showed us what he's capable of in the UFC. So I think Holtzman will continue to improve. And maybe this is the type of highlight reel finish that he can get over McBride as the fight goes, or, you know, a big, maybe decisive type of win for Holtzman to get him a little bit more confidence and start working him up the ladder a little bit more. So should be a good fight, should be entertaining. I think what happens is Holtzman probably finds a way to finish along the way. If not, he probably grinds out a decision win on the scorecard. So hard not to pick against Holtzman in this one.
Michael McBride has the size to compete in the lightweight division. I mean, he's going to have 6 inches in reach on Holtzman. He's going to have 4 inches in height. But his problem is he's not a striker. He's a guy that looks for submissions. Almost all of his career victories are by submission. And Holtzman is a talented grappler that trains out of the MMA lab. I just don't see McBride tapping Holtzman out. So that means that McBride is going to have to win the positional battle. And I don't see him winning that as well, because Holtzman is probably the better wrestler. And McBride sometimes will give up position to go for submissions. And when those don't work, he's going to be stuck in a bad place. And Holtzman will at least have the superior position and be winning the round. Now, McBride, even though he does have that reach, he doesn't really offer much on the feet. So Holtzman will probably get the better of him there as well, even though he's given up so much in terms of length. Now, one thing you do have to consider is McBride did fight his UFC debut on short notice, but it didn't go very well. I mean, Nick Lentz just grinded him out and then just wore him down and then finished him. I mean, it was an impressive performance. And while Scott Holtzman isn't quite on the level of Nick Lentz, I mean, he's kind of like Nick Lentz light. So, in terms of scrappiness, pretty good wrestling, pretty good submissions, and decent on the feet. So I just think that when Michael McBride isn't able to get those early submissions, then Holtzman is just going to take over, wear him out, and either win a one-sided decision or get a finish. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Dustin Ortiz, who is 16-6, taking on Brandon Moreno, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Ortiz -120, the comeback of Moreno -120. Looking for five dimes right now. It is currently Ortiz -220, the comeback of Moreno +180. Wow. Lines moved a little bit. So it went from a pick'em to Ortiz -220. This was tough because I wasn't sure, obviously, who the public was going to favor a little bit. Moreno's getting some momentum on his side. He's getting some hype on his side as well. And that could cause some public action to come his way, even though this should be a fairly competitive fight, but it did not. I think a lot of the smarter opinions out there came in on Ortiz because of the stylistic matchup with Moreno here in this spot, and they're not kind of buying into all the hype or whatnot that's around Moreno, which is smart. I understand where they're coming from. I mean, Ortiz is one of the best grapplers in the flyweight division, and he's been really for a long time, probably underrated for a long time. So now he's starting to get a little bit of respect. Of course, a lot of that is due to who he's been able to beat. I mean, his last fight with Makovsky was impressive. I mean, Makovsky's a stud, in a weight class stud on the ground. Of course, he's just a well-rounded fighter, former Bellator champ. We all know that. So it was an impressive win for Ortiz to defeat a guy like Makovsky, especially the way that fight played out. But before that, I mean, he suffered a couple losses to great grapplers with Formiga and Hayes, but he beat the likes of Willie Gates. He hung in there with Benavidez, despite that being a loss. His win over Scoggins was controversial. I thought he lost that fight, but he made it close enough that you got to give him a lot of credit as well for hanging in there and making it a split decision. I mean, if other judges would have been there, could have scored it the other way. But the point being, we know what kind of grappler Scoggins is, considering he's a striker. I mean, he's strong enough that he was able to keep a guy like Ray Borg planted on his back and controlled him, and which nobody was able to have that much success against him. So Ortiz having that much success against a strong guy that's actually had to move out of that division at this point tells you a lot. I mean, the guy is capable of out-grappling most in the flyweight division. So that's where everybody's coming in on this fight. It's not because they think Ortiz is going to knock Moreno out. It's because they think he's going to out-grapple Moreno, put him on his back, out-scramble him, make him work a little bit more, wear him out. So I understand it. I see it. I respect it. I think at this point, though, everybody's probably counting Moreno's grappling out a little bit. I mean, of course, we all know he's got a good sub game. I mean, I think 9 out of his 13 wins are by submission, so we know that. I mean, it sticks out to you. But the level of competition obviously hasn't been the same, quite the same as Ortiz. Although Moreno is starting to fight some quality opposition for sure. He had a successful run on The Ultimate Fighter, as we know there. Even though it didn't quite work out for him, he didn't win the show, but he still, I mean, he put on such a good showing that it definitely gained him a lot of respect. And then, of course, coming into his UFC debut and defeating a guy like Smoka the way he did. And let me say, that wasn't really no fluke. I mean, that's how good Moreno's guillotine choke could really be. I mean, he's that good on the ground as far as ending the fight with submissions as well. So it wasn't that flukish. And Smoka's a hard guy to finish on the ground, as we just saw against the likes of Tim Elliott as well. But then following it up with another test for him in Benoit. Benoit's one of these guys that a lot of MMA diehards aren't going to be overly impressed by Benoit. I mean, he's okay. He's just a solid level fighter in the weight class, maybe a gatekeeper type of fighter. Moreno had a competitive fight with him. I think if you look back closer at that fight, Moreno had a little bit more success than most people think. So I know at times he got a little testy and Benoit had some success, but Moreno's takedown ability in that fight was impressive. His striking was pretty solid as well. So I think what we're going to see here is the continued growth of Moreno that people are going to underestimate a little bit. He's only 23 years old. He's now training, I think, better than he ever has before. He's now a little bit smarter. His fight IQ has gotten better than he ever has before as well. He wants to get tested. He's asking for higher ranked competition, and he's getting it with Ortiz. Now, again, is this a point where he might bite off a little bit more than he could chew? It could possibly be. I mean, it's going to really all come down to the grappling exchanges between these two men. I think people are going to be surprised. Moreno is going to end up getting top position in this fight at times, and I think he's going to actually hang in there with Ortiz as far as the grappling exchanges go. And then on the feet, I think Moreno is a little bit of the more dangerous striker, and he could be a little bit more effective as well. So to me, this was pretty much a true type of pick'em fight with a slight lean towards Ortiz before I even, set the line. I figured I did lean a little bit more towards Ortiz, but since everybody on the planet is coming in that way thinking Ortiz is going to have his way with Moreno, I'm going to jump the other way because I do see that Moreno, even on the ground where everybody thinks is not the case, I think he can hang with Ortiz and I think he can make it interesting. So I'll go against the grain. I'll pick Moreno here, and I think he can pull off the win here. Probably a close competitive decision, a split decision type of fight, but I think he can do it. So I'm picking him to win.
Yeah, Dustin Ortiz is a tough fighter to get a read on. I mean, he goes out there and he picks up a lot of quality wins that are close, crazy split decisions. Sometimes he loses them, but I mean, wins over Ray Borg, over Scoggins, as you mentioned. And then he goes out there and then he loses fights that you would think that he should be able to win, like Wilson Hayes.
So it's just, it's difficult. He's very, very inconsistent. I mean, this goes back all the way to before he was even in the UFC when I watched him lose to basically a career 500 journeyman that hailed out of Toledo. So, I mean, Ortiz is just, he's a very talented fighter, but there's something about him that always freaks me out a little bit. Now in this fight against Moreno is a guy that has started his UFC career off incredibly. I mean, the quick win over Smolka, and then he goes out there and I thought he looked, rock solid in his second UFC appearance against Ryan Benoit. And there's a lot to like about Moreno. I mean, he's long. He's got a little bit of power. He has a strong ground game and he kind of just has a little bit of a swagger about him. The problem though is I don't think this is a very good stylistic matchup. Moreno should be able to win the striking exchanges if he can keep his distance because he does have some reach and a little bit of pop in his hands. But Ortiz is at his best when he is kind of bullying his opponent, when he's pressuring them. And I expect Ortiz to be the one moving forward, throwing heavy hands. Even though he doesn't really have a lot of knockout ability, I think he can make Moreno fight off of his back heels a little bit more than what Ryan Benoit was able to do. And then Ortiz, while Moreno does have a decent wrestling game, as Nick mentioned, I think Ortiz is better, and Ortiz is just the physically stronger fighter. So he can kind of push Moreno around a little bit. I can see Ortiz getting inside position in the clinch. I can see Ortiz getting top position on the ground. And as long as he doesn't get submitted, and he shouldn't because, you know, Formiga, Hayes, Borg, none of them were able to submit him, then I can see Ortiz just getting the top position, the superior position, and grinding this out a little bit. I mean, I don't expect it to be a walk in the park. Ortiz almost never has walk in the park fights. Even the fights he wins are crazy close decisions. So I just think though that with Moreno's skill set, Ortiz, it doesn't complement Ortiz's, and Ortiz is, I think, can just overpower him a little bit. And I can see him, just wearing him out a little bit and doing just enough to win a close competitive decision with the strength and wrestling and the pressure. So I like Dustin Ortiz here. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card. We have a middleweight contest between Talis Latus, who is 26-7, and Sam Alvey, who is 38 and with one no contest. So Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Latus, -130, the comeback on Alvey at -110. Right now it's Latus, -120. The comeback on Alvey is even money. Just a little bit ago, before we even started the podcast, it was Alvey the slight favorite. So this fight is going to continue to get a ton of action, two-way action. Pick'em line is about right here as well. So it seems to be appropriately set, and it seems to be probably ballpark to where it closes. I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe Alvey closing my -130 or so, and then or Latus closing -130 or so. So good fight, competitive fight. I can't believe I'm saying that is in regards to if this was a couple years back, I would think the Latus actually is obviously a little bit of a bigger favor. But Alvey has really put together a good little streak here that he's wrapped up in the UFC, and he's gained a lot of respect from the overall betting community, from the MMA fans, that it is keeping this fight a little bit closer. I mean, Latus, if you compare resumes, they're both impressive. I mean, there's no slouches at all, but I think Latus has always been a little bit more impressive. I mean, his fight with even current middleweight champion Michael Bisping was close. I mean, he could have easily won his way. Right now, that's how, you know, the high caliber Latus is. And he's been on some streaks against quality competition as well throughout his career. So he's faced the best of the best, and he's come out with a victory more times than not in most cases with Latus too. And he's improved. He's a grappler. We all know that, but his stand-up's improved to the point where he can outstrike a lot of people in the middleweight division anyway. In fact, I think he's a better overall striker here in this spot as well. I mean, the tools that he could throw at you compared to Alvey. Alvey's a little bit more limited in what he throws, but I think Alvey obviously can be a little bit more effective. He's the bigger knockout artist here for sure. He packs a punch, and that's where, you know, he's going to have the advantage over Latus. But I think Latus can be a little bit busier overall. I think Latus can mix things up on the feet a little bit better. And of course, Latus, if he gets the fight to the ground, then he's a nightmare to deal with to anybody that fights him. Now, of course, Alvey does have solid takedown defense. it's not going to be easy for ladies to get him on the ground. And in most cases, when even if Alvey does get placed on his back, he usually kind of cage walks back up and gets back to his feet quickly. So this is a tough fight. I mean, this is one of those fights that I realistically could see going either way. I mean, I think stylistically, this is a good fight for Alvey because what I was just saying, I'm going to contradict myself a little bit here, but I think Lightus, he doesn't push quite high enough of a pace. And if he kind of lets the fight play out like Alvey wants, then Alvey's going to be right in this fight, and Alvey's going to be very game, and he's going to be a little bit more dangerous too. So I've been going back and forth on this fight. I'm not very confident either way who gets this win. I could realistically say it going either way. So a pick 'em again, like I said at the beginning, is appropriately set for this fight, especially right now. I mean, where we stand in 2017 with both of their careers. So I have to lean, I guess, a little bit more towards Lightus because I think that he is still the more well-rounded fighter. I think wherever the fight takes place, he could probably edge Alvey out. But Alvey is going to be the more dangerous fighter, even if Lightus has a granite chin and he's been a pretty tough guy his whole life, never being officially knocked out. There's always a first time for everything, and he is 35 years old now. So he's not going to be improving and taking more strides in his career at this point. Where I think Alvey still can. I mean, he's definitely a student of the game. I mean, he takes the sport very seriously. He's a dedicated as far as his training goes, and he studies film well. I mean, there's a lot of good things to like about Alvey, so I think he will be prepared for this fight, and he could pull off the win. So back and forth I go on this fight, but just because overall skill set mainly, I have to side a little bit more towards Lightus.
Sam Alvey is on a hell of a run right now. 4-fight winning streak dating back to last July, so just not even in the last year. I mean, he's been fighting consistently and often, and he's just a guy that you can't keep down. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that he lost a decision to Elias Theodoro, and what did he do? He just doubled down, bet on himself, and just got right back in there and won. So, and he's done nothing but win since, and now he's a top 15 ranked fighter. It's crazy. He's higher ranked than Theodoro. So, you know, Alvey's a guy that you really can't help but like. You know, he's got that smile that he just never takes off his face. He hits like a Mack truck, and he's durable, and he's kind of like the middleweight version of Donald Cerrone, just constantly wanting to get in there. Doesn't want to take a lot of time off. So that being said, though, I'm a little worried that he's biting off more than he can chew. Against the middle of the division, against the bottom tier of the division, Alvey looks great. But he's had trouble when he stepped up in competition against the higher ranked guys. I mean, yeah, he did a nice job against Nate Marquardt, a former title challenger, but Nate Marquardt's nearing the end of his career. When Alvey was forced to fight somebody like Derek Brunson, who's, you know, just a nasty power threat, I mean, he got steamrolled in that fight. And this is a guy that in Alvey that is known for a granite chin, and he just got blown out of the water. Now, I'm not saying that Talis Latis is going to blow Sam Alvey out of the water because he doesn't fight like Derek Brunson, but it could happen, like, in terms of just Alvey being outworked, out-techniqued. Latis is a much better striker than people give him credit for. I mean, he went 5 rounds on the feet with Michael Bisping in a razor-close decision that honestly could have gone either way. And then he's had a lot of big-time performances with some knockouts on the feet as well throughout his run since he returned to the UFC. And he's looked pretty good. But what's really always been Lidus's bread and butter has been his ground game. I mean, you saw that with his victory over Chris Camozzi, where he just took the fight to the floor and got top position and ended up getting a late submission. Now, again, Lidus has had his issues, but you got to remember, yeah, he's lost 3 of his last 4, but look who he lost to. I mean, Michael Bisping, the champ, and that fight was a split decision, round 5 split decision. Gegard Mousasi, Lidus couldn't get his ground game going, and Mousasi is just a much better striker. And then Krzysztof Żatko, that was a bit surprising just because Żatko was a little bit more unknown at the time. But, I mean, at this point, people are starting to respect Żatko. I mean, this guy's on a huge win streak as well. So I think even though Lidus hasn't looked the best, this is could still definitely be a trap fight for Sam Alvey. Lidus can hold his own on the feet. And then if this fight goes to the floor, Alvey's going to be in trouble. Like, he just does not have the ground game to match Talos Letus. Granted, Alvey did pull off an impressive submission against Eric Spicely, a guy that I thought also had a better ground game than Alvey. But I think he more caught him by surprise. I don't see Alvey catching Letus by surprise. Really, the only way I see Alvey winning this fight is if he just clocks Letus with a monster shot. And Letus is tough. He's durable. I don't think he's ever been finished with strikes. And he's faced some really talented strikers in his career. You know, Anderson Silva, Gegard Mousasi, and none of them were able to finish him either. So I think what happens here is Alvey might be a little tentative because he's worried about overcommitting on a strike and then landing on his back. And I think Letus can take advantage of that and win a stand-up fight with Alvey as long as he avoids getting just blasted. And if the fight goes to the ground, I see Letus winning it there as well. So I like Talos Letus. I think he probably wins a decision. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have a welterweight contest between Jake Ellenberger, who is 31-12, and Mike Perry, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Perry, minus 185. The comeback on Ellenberger, plus 145. Early action did drop a line significantly right away, but now we're seeing Perry right back at minus 185, where I opened it, and the comeback on Ellenberger is plus 160, currently live at five dimes. So two-way action, to say the least, on this fight as well. Craziness early on, and I think we're going to continue to see that, though. And it'll probably settle just under 2-1. So I think the opening spot was fair, especially where they are right now in their careers. I mean, Ellenberger, of course, is by far the more established fighter. I mean, he's faced quality competition, to say the least. I mean, you know, he's been in there with the best of the best as well, and he's beaten a lot of those guys. And just a few years ago, I mean, this guy was in line and the biggest threat to, you know, maybe wear that strap with his power punching, with his wrestling. I mean, he was one of the most dangerous welterweights in the sport, for sure. Now, that's faded a little bit because, I mean, as he, you know, his career progresses, he's been around for a long, long time, Ellenberger has. So, I mean, he's 32 years old. So it's one of those scenarios where he's 32, but in fight years, he's way beyond that. So, yeah, I mean, he was on the brink of getting cut. Let's face it. I mean, in fact, he's the one that kind of asked for the UFC to give him one more shot. Because give him one more shot. He'll prove that he belongs and he wants to keep his spot on the roster. And credit to him, they gave him a spot against Matt Brown, which everybody underestimated him in that spot, including myself, because Brown, of course, has made himself to the point where, I mean, how could you not respect Brown with his fighting style, with the way he goes about things? But he was able to get Brown out of there. I mean, early knockout win for him was really impressive. I mean, so he showed some life there. And then, of course, against Masvidal in his last fight, unfortunately for him, it goes down as a knockout loss. But, man, the way that fight kind of played out with his, you know, toes being caught in a fence or whatnot, I mean, it's a little bit unfair for him to say the least too. So that I don't even take that fight against him or whatnot, especially against Masvidal, because Masvidal has looked ridiculously good anyway, despite all that. So you can't count the Masvidal fight. And he, it looks like to me, you can base it back to the fight against Brown where he looked good early on in that fight. So I think he has a little bit more confidence right now in his ability again, which he needed. I think mentally, obviously, this is a big aspect of the game for these fighters, and I think, you know, if his mind's in the right place, then he can have some success. So I think mentally Ellenberger's at a better place right now in his career, and physically he has the tools that he can upset still a lot of people in the welterweight division. So we'll see. It's a tough one though against Perry. Honestly, he's been a little bit more impressive than I originally thought. I wasn't expecting him, even in his UFC debut for Perry, I wasn't really expecting him to have a ton of success against Lim. I thought to myself he was a bit chinny from watching footage before he entered the UFC. Of course, we knew he had a little bit of power on the feet and he had a wrestling background or whatnot, but he wasn't that impressive, honestly, in fight footage that we saw. But he comes out there and just blows Lim out of the water. And then he follows that up with a solid win over Roberts. And then his fight against Joban, even though he lost that fight, he has moments in that fight as well. And Joban, of course, is one of the better strikers that we all know at 170 pounds as well. So it was a good experience for Perry. So for me, his stock is actually on the rise a little bit. So I think what he's going to find himself here with Ellenberger, he's going to have to be careful because, again, Ellenberger can land that shot and knock him out any moment. But I think the same thing can be said for Perry, and I trust him a little bit more at this point because he doesn't have those fight years on his belt right now. So I think Perry is probably the right side. I think they do scrap it out a little bit. It's a close competitive type of fight. I think they neutralize each other out with the wrestling, and I think it's going to be a stand-up war. And I just trust Perry just a little bit more than I do Ellenberger right now. So I think Perry ends up ultimately landing that finishing blow and putting Ellenberger out. So much respect to Ellenberger. I mean, he's obviously he has to be a well-respected fighter in amongst most of our ratings. I mean, especially me, I think he's, I mean, from his IFL days before that, actually, again, you could date it back to Sport Fight and all that as well. So Ellenberger has been around for a long time. I followed his career. I'm glad that he got another shot from the UFC, but I'm just not sure what he has left. And I think a fight against Perry is not going to be a good thing for him. So I'll pick Perry to come away with a win here.
This is a tough fight to get a read on because both guys hit really hard. Neither guy has a very good chin, and it could just come down to who lands that first big shot. That being said, at this point in their careers, Jake Ellenberger's chin is worse than Mike Perry's. Perry, you know, he hasn't been knocked out in the UFC. I don't know if he hasn't been knocked out at all. He's just been hurt a few times. I mean, Joe Bann hurt him a couple times in his last fight that he lost a decision. And then before that, he did get rocked a few times outside the UFC, but he's never been finished. And we've seen Jake Ellenberger not just finished, but destroyed in fights. Most recently, you know, it was a frustrating loss for him with his foot being whatever stuck in between the fence and the floor of the octagon. But I mean, it was a TKO is a TKO and Ellenberger, you know, it's not like that was the first time Ellenberger got TKO'd. I mean, he's been finished quite a few times now in his career with, Stephen Thompson beating him, Kelvin Gastelum submitting him, Robbie Lawler TKO'd him, Marvin Kampman was the first one to really do it. So, you know, Jake Ellenberger's chin just isn't what it used to be. Now, his power is still there, as evident by his performance against Matt Brown. But, man, I just can't trust that chin. And especially against a guy in Mike Perry that can swing from the fences with a lot of heat. I'm kind of leaning Mike Perry here. I know that Ellenberger can wrestle too, and he has a decent submission game if he can get top position. You saw he had a pretty good performance against Josh Koscheck, kind of. And so if Ellenberger can get the wrestling going, maybe that can give him an extra edge. So he does have a little bit more of a couple more ways to win. But overall, you got to lean with the youth here. And Mike Perry is more of the youth movement. He's got less wear and tear. And if both these guys land a big punch at the same time, even though I think they both would get hurt, I think Ellenberger would get more hurt and Perry would probably be able to pull off the finish. So I'm leaning Mike Perry. Ellenberger could definitely surprise me here and pick up the win. But at this point in their careers, Perry just has a little bit more left in the tank and more to offer. So I'm going to side with Platinum Perry. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Joe Lauzon, who is 27-13, taking on Stevie Ray, who is 20-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight and how has the public shifted things so far?
Another crazy movement here. I've opened it almost a pick 'em with Lauzon being -125, Ray being -115 with a 40-cent line setting. So virtually pick 'em with a very, very tiny lean towards Lauzon, but that wasn't good enough because right now it's -210 for Ray, the comeback on Lauzon, +175. So basically went from a pick 'em rain all the way up to about a 2-1 favorite for Ray. Talk about fight years. I get it as far as that regard goes. I mean, Lauzon, I was just talking about Lindberger. You could put Lauzon in that same category. He's been around the sport for a long, long time. In fight years, he's way beyond 32 years old, even though he's had some pretty good performances as of late, too, Lauzon has. I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't a fan of his last performance against Held because he got the nod there, and obviously we were on Held for that. So we thought we earned that decision win over him, even though Lauzon was man enough to admit that he lost that fight. Doesn't help us here. So, yeah, I have to kind of bring that up for a second because I'm still a little bitter about that. But that being said, he still hung in there close enough with a guy like Held, I think, which, of course, a lot of people weren't expecting Held to win that fight. But still, I mean, Held is a young guy that has a tremendous grappling base, of course. Tough matchup for a lot of people. And Lauzon still, even though he lost that fight, in my opinion, and many people's opinions, he still, you know, showed enough against an elite level grappler on the ground. But not just that. I mean, Lauzon has a well-rounded game. On the feet, he can bust you up. He's got the experience, the fight IQ. I think, honestly, the last couple of years, even though he's getting a little bit older and kind of more worn out fight years-wise, I think he's put on some of the best performances of his life. So Lauzon is in a good spot but that chin isn't going to get any better. I mean, he's been through wars throughout his career, as we know. So he's been knocked out a few times, and Ray is a heavy hitter. I mean, Ray can definitely – that's his best attribute here in his fight against Lozon, is if he's able to stay off his back here against Lozon and he makes this a striking battle, he's going to probably win because he is, again, the harder hitter. I think he can outstrike Lozon even if he doesn't knock him out on the feet as well. He could do more damage along the way and just kind of outpoint him on the feet. So that's what Ray wants to do here. But if there's a kryptonite to Ray's game, it is definitely the ground game as well. He's been subbed, I believe, 4 times throughout his career. He has gotten better. He's improved on the ground as well. But, I mean, it didn't sit well with me watching his fight with Patrick. And that's what bothers me as well, because Patrick actually has a little bit of underrated grappling game, underrated wrestling game. But at times, it's non-existent for Patrick. But it existed that day. I mean, it definitely showed up against Ray in his fight, and he was able to basically get Ray down and control the ground aspect of that fight and beat him. Now, if Lozon chooses to go that route, he can do that. His wrestling is definitely good enough to put Ray on his back and control the tempo of the fight and not get obviously caught up in a sub against Ray. Ray has a decent sub game, but I don't think he catches Lozon on the ground with the sub game. So Lozon, it all depends on IQ here. It all depends on, you know, his way about this fight. If he decides to just have a war and a fight of the night type of performance, he probably loses this fight. If he decides to actually go for the win and doesn't really care about fan opinion and take Ray down and make it kind of a boring decision and kind of outpoint him, he can win this fight. So all depends on how this plays out. I understand the younger fighters getting the more, you know, pub right now, and Ray deserves it. Ray is a good fighter, and I'm glad he got a shot in the UFC, and I'm glad he's having success in the UFC as well. But that being said, in this matchup, everybody's going, again, one way. They think Ray automatically basically either knocked him out or is going to beat him on the cards easily. I'm not so sure. I mean, this is another fight that I could, you know, flip a coin and pick. I was leaning a little bit more towards Ray as well because I think he's more durable and he probably keeps it upright enough to knock him out. But with everybody thinking that way again, I have to go against the public grain here, and I'm going to pick Lozon. So I think Lozon comes away with the win. Hopefully he chooses to wrestle, because that's why I'm kind of choosing him to do so here. If he does that, I think he does win the fight. So we'll see. Hopefully he comes out with a good game plan. But my official pick is Lozon to defeat Ray.
This is another tricky matchup. I mean, Joe Lozon didn't look very good in his last fight against Marcin Held. And as Nick mentioned, I mean, we were certain he lost that fight. And I actually picked Lozon in that fight. And he just did not fight the way that I expected. I thought that he would try to win some grappling exchange. I did not expect him to be stuck on his back for most of the fight. Now, this time around, Stevie Ray's not going to be trying to take the fight to the floor. Ray really doesn't have much of a ground game. You saw that in his loss to... Alan Patrick. And Joe Lozon can definitely take advantage of that. If he can get this fight to the ground, Lozon can win it. I mean, he's just way better on the ground, and Ray can be exposed there. He got worn out by Patrick, and he didn't quite quit, but I mean, he looked extremely frustrated in that fight, and he was exhausted by the end of the third round because he's just not used to fighting like that. Now, last time around, Ray looked a little bit better against Ray Pearson, or Ray looked a little bit better against Ross Pearson, but I mean, he still didn't look that good. I mean, he just kind of took advantage of the fact that Pearson doesn't really have a high output, and Ray just did just enough to kind of eke out a decision over him. This time around, Ray might have to use a similar game plan because he is the better striker than Joe Lozon, hands down, and he does have a little bit more durability than Lozon on the feet. But if he overcommits on his strikes, he's going to leave himself exposed to takedowns. So Ray's going to have to pick his spots a little bit, try to keep his distance, work that powerful left hook that he has, and just take advantage of the fact that Lozon has never really been a great striker. And even when Lozon kind of comes under fire, he doesn't really fire back. He more covers up. So there's going to be openings here for Ray to get some damage in. And as long as he can avoid being put on his back, I just don't really see a great path to victory for Lozon other than get this fight to the ground, because Ray is just probably that much better of a striker. But Ray does have his holes, and if this fight goes to the ground, I'm definitely going to be concerned. But I think that Ray should be able to win this fight, and we'll see how he looks. But I think Lozon is definitely starting to be on the downswing of his career, and this could be a prime opportunity for Stevie Ray to get a really good scalp on his record. So my pick's going to be Stevie Ray. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have John Dodson, who is 19-8, taking on Eddie Wineland, who is 23-11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Dodson minus 280, the comeback on Wineland at plus 200. Right now, looking over at fivedimes.eu, it's currently Dodson minus 420, the comeback on Wineland is at plus 335. So basically from 3-1 to 4-1, bet action, bet it up against a very, very solid, respected fighter in Wineland for sure. There's no doubt, especially at bantamweights. I mean, Dodson, of course, we all know, has competed in both weight classes. He's made a move to bantamweight recently. He's had some serious success in both weight classes. Outside of his little setback with Lineker in his last outing, which was actually a respectable performance as well, because that was a pretty close fight, and Lineker's just a beast the way he comes at you. But that being said, so Dodson is that good. I mean, either at 125, 135, doesn't matter. Skill is skill, and he's able to adapt and compete with the best in both weight classes. That's how special this guy is. I mean, credit to him for all the hard work he's put in, and man, his athleticism is off the charts. His speed, his power, everything about him is just great in the MMA world for sure. I mean, fans love watching him fight for that exact reason. Wineland, you can say a lot of the same things about him. I mean, the guy, obviously he doesn't have the speed or athleticism that Dodson does. He's a little bit bigger though. He's going to have some advantages in this fight. He's going to have some reach. He's going to have some length, of course. He does have some power to go along with it. He has a ton of experience, so it's not going to be a walk in the park. I think it's going to be fairly competitive. It's just the speed factor of Dodson combining with, again, we were talking about aging vets. I mean, this whole podcast seems to be kind of a theme a little bit, right? Wineland's another one of these guys. He's been around the sport for a long time, has faced the best of the best as far as competition goes. So just because he's 32 years old, he's beyond that in MMA years. So he's an older guy as well. Not that Dodson hasn't been around a block either, but I think as far as boars and battle tested goes, Wineland is definitely beyond what Dodson is right now. So he could be on a little bit of a decline, even though Wineland has showed some life recently as well. And what you like to see, I mean, he's able to, get back on track and win back-to-back fights, and he's finished those fights as well against solid competition. So you cannot underestimate Wineland. I mean, he still has something left in the tank for sure, and that's why I think this is going to be a scrap. It's probably going to be a little bit closer than all think, but the problem here is it's just going to take that one clean shot from Dodson to break in and just close the gap, and I think land that hard shot and could possibly put Wineland out. Or the speed factor is going to be too much, and it should help Dodson win a clear decision on the scorecard. It's competitive but clear, meaning that obviously Dodson's going to kind of be able to maneuver away from some of the strikes Wineland throws, and he's going to be able to land his a little bit cleaner and a little bit more often. So I expect Dodson to probably win this if it does hit the cards. If it does not hit the cards, it's probably Dodson landing a big punch inside and dropping Wineland and ending it that way too. So I do get it. I agree with it. Another spot though that I would not lay 4-1 against a guy like Wineland, especially right now with all the circumstances with the public kind of betting up Dodson a little bit as well. I don't think there's any value there. It's probably a dog or pass situation, but besides all that, I do think that Dodson comes away with a win here, and I think it's the right pick. So that's the way I'm going.
Eddie Wineland's been on a nice little run with this two-fight win streak, two impressive TKOs, but you got to remember who he's beating. He beat Frankie Sains, a fighter in his late 30s in the bantamweight division, and then Takeya Mitsugaki, a fighter with more wear and tear on him than just about anybody in the bantamweight division. Now, again, Wineland's victories were impressive, but he's facing someone here in John Dodson who's extremely quick, extremely powerful, and has a granite chin. And Wineland doesn't do so well against those type of fighters. The last time he faced somebody that had a similar skill set to John Dodson was Joseph Benavidez, and Benavidez torched Wineland. I think he dropped him about three times, maybe four times in that fight. So this is a fight that I just think is a terrible matchup for Wineland. Unless Wineland can somehow fight really long, I just don't see it happening. I mean, this is a guy that has a great, unique style where he presses the action and forces his opponent to engage and then counters him. But, man, when John Dodson engages, I don't think he has to worry too much about Wineland's counters because he's going to connect on Wineland and then probably put him out. I mean, Wineland doesn't have a bad chin, but he has been finished by strikes a couple times now in his last few fights, in his last few losses at least. And John Dodson might hit the hardest of anybody he's fought. So if Dodson connects with anything, like anything serious, I think Wineland could be in for a world of hurt. And Dodson definitely is pretty pissed off right now after that tough decision loss to John Lineker, a fight that could have gone either way, was just neck and neck all the way to the end. And Dodson fought with a smart game plan, but I don't think he'll need that same style of game plan against Wineland. I think he can just go right after him, kind of like Johnny Eduardo did. So I think this is a great matchup for Dodson, and I expect that he walks away with a victory, probably by stoppage at some point via TKO or knockout. Now moving all the way up to the light heavyweight division, we have Ovin St. Preux, who is 19-10, taking on Marcos Rogério de Lima, who is 15-5-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open OSP minus 270, the comeback on de Lima at plus 190. Everybody coming in scooping up that plus money on de Lima. He is down now. OSP is down to minus 160. The comeback of de Lima is at plus 140. So everybody pretty much on the same page thinking that de Lima has some value as a dog here. And he could. I mean, you guys might be onto something as far as OSP's performances as of late. I mean, it's been pretty bad. It's been pretty pathetic, to be honest with you, especially a guy that was on the rise for a long time in the light heavyweight division that we thought would be, honestly, eventually get his game well enough to be a legit threat or a serious contender if he kept on making his improvements. Because, of course, OSP is a very athletic guy, powerful, big for the weight class, a lot of skill to go along with it. So there's a lot of good to OSP's game. But, again, his split decision loss in his last fight, his knockout loss before that to Manoa, was a little bit disappointing. And then, of course, dating back to the time that he lost to John Jones, not long ago either. I mean, that was, he made it the distance with the former champ, I should say former or current. I mean, obviously we all know that John Jones is the best right now, even with DC wearing that strap. That being said, he went the distance. He didn't get finished. And then he had a couple disappointing performances after. So where is OSP at this point of his career? I don't know. Hopefully he rebounds here. I mean, this is definitely the type of fighter that you want to get to rebound. He is dangerous. De Lima has a ton of power, has a bit of a ground game as well, even though he doesn't use it as often as you'd like to see him with De Lima. But he is definitely a flawed fighter in his own right. I mean, he's got somewhat of a suspect chin. He's got a suspect ground game when it comes to defensively. I mean, De Lima on the ground, again, offensively, he has a good guillotine choke. He could get you in trouble, has some ground and pound to go along with it on the ground. But defensively, I mean, you could have your way with De Lima on the ground. That's just the way it is. He has a couple losses on the ground by submission. And honestly, I think his ground game is a tad bit overrated. So OSP can definitely exploit a lot of weaknesses De Lima has. He just has to be careful, fight a smart fight, and not get caught by a big bomb from De Lima. So I really lean OSP in this fight. I just think this is a perfect, again, situation scenario for him to bounce back and get a win over a guy he really should beat. So I get it. I understand why everybody's coming in kind of fading OSP at this point with de Lima. But, man, if you want to fade anybody, I think it's eventually de Lima here as well. I just don't trust the guy that much either. But that being said, hard to lay the price on OSP based on what the performances have been recently. So I get it, but I'm still going to pick him. I think OSP is the better fighter, and I think he has more ways to win this fight, and he really should. So that's my pick.
There's not a lot to say about this fight. It's going to go one or two ways. Either Marcos Rogério de Lima is going to land a monster shot and knock St. Preux out, or St. Preux is going to probably put away de Lima. De Lima really isn't the type of fighter that goes the distance. St. Preux doesn't have an amazing gas tank. I mean, he really started to slow down after he couldn't land a lot of shots against Jimmy Manoa. And I really think what's going to happen here is St. Preux will just weather that early storm from de Lima and then connect with a few good bombs and maybe even get top position on the ground. St. Preux is a great athlete, but he really has never been able to really put it all together. I mean, early in his career, this guy was pulling off calf slicers and all kinds of crazy things on the ground. And then he kind of fell in love with his hands after he knocked out, you know, Shogun. So we'll see if he chooses to turn this into a stand and trade battle. He's playing with fire and he could get burnt. But if St. Preux can mix in his full skill set here, then he's got a decent shot of not just walking away with a victory, but getting a finish. De Lima hits hard. You saw that in his last fight. All it really takes is one good shot. And St. Preux's chin is not quite as good as it used to be. I mean, He got blasted by Manoa, and then he went out and basically lost a stand-up fight in his last bout. So I'm definitely a bit concerned about St. Preux, but I mean, on paper, he's still so much better than De Lima that as long as he doesn't get clipped, he should win this fight. So I'm just going into this believing that he won't get clipped. So my pick is going to be OSP. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have Al Iaquinta in the lightweight division, who is 12-3-1, taking on veteran Diego Sanchez, who is 29-9. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Iaquinta -350, the comeback on Sanchez at +250. Line has been bet up a little bit. Iaquinta is now -400. The comeback on Sanchez is at +325, but there's been some action coming back in on the dog as we get closer to fight time as well. I mean, a lot of times when you see Diego Sanchez as a big dog, of course you're going to see some action there. Just the name, I mean, the warrior status that he has, the respect that he gets from all of us. Love him or hate him, you know the guy's a warrior. He's going to bring it every time. He has no quit in him. I mean, again, another scenario where we've been talking about guys being for a long time. I mean, this guy was the original Ultimate Fighter winner, for crying out loud, and he's still relevant in the sport at lightweight these days. He's basically a gatekeeper. And he's basically getting fed to Iaquinta here. And I'm saying that because Iaquinta's had some time off, as we all know. So a nice rebound fight for Iaquinta would be coming in, facing an established vet like Sanchez, getting an impressive win, and then getting back on track. So that's the game plan, I think, here for the UFC, for the promoters, from the matchmakers. And all of us kind of would probably like to see it play out that way, because Iaquinta is a pretty popular fighter. He's got skill. I mean, the guy has definitely a well-rounded enough game that he could be a threat and a potential title challenger at lightweight. He just has to get his head on right. He has to just get the positive momentum going for him, and he just has to kind of stay on track. He's been with some injuries, with just some personal stuff. I'm not sure what exactly all the problems have been with Iaquinta as of late, but we definitely want to see him competing more often than he has, and because he is that kind of talent. So I think stylistically here, how he matches up with Sanchez is pretty good, really, because Iaquinta is by far the better striker, by far the more dangerous striker of the two. So I think if he keeps it upright on the feet, he's going to probably end up finishing Sanchez. And Sanchez is not an easy guy to finish. We know that. But again, 2017 Diego Sanchez, it's possible. And Iaquinta can get that job done. Outside of that, I mean, Iaquinta should have the takedown defense to be able to keep it upright to do so. Wrestling should neutralize each other out a little bit. But Sanchez is obviously the better grappler of the two. And I think that's Sanchez's path to victory, is actually maybe getting Iaquinta's back in a scramble or whatnot and trying to sink in a rear naked choke to end it. Or even just smothering him and trying to maintain top position in a three-round decision. I don't see that part happening. So, I mean, if he could take his back, I think that's a shot here. I don't think he's going to knock out Iaquinta. I don't think he's going to beat him on the cards either, honestly. So it's Iaquinta's fight to win or lose. I think he should end up getting a highlight reel type of knockout here over a quality opponent like Sanchez. So that's my pick.
Sanchez definitely pulled a rabbit out of his hat his last time around with that fight against Marcin Held. And it was a great performance, a gutsy performance. But it also had a lot to do with Held fighting really dumb and pulling guard and going for heel hooks repeatedly against somebody that is nearly impossible to submit. So I think this time around, it's not going to be quite as easy. Granted, Al Iaquinta is very unpredictable. I mean, this guy has so much talent. He hits hard. He has good boxing. He has great coaching, but he does a lot of dumb things where he just puts himself in bad situations, like getting tapped out by Mitch Clark. There's no reason in a million years he should have lost that fight, but he did. Now, obviously, he's had some great performances as well. I mean, Ross Pearson, Joe Lozon, both round two TKO victories. He looked fantastic in those fights. But it's just, he's been out of it for a while now, too. I mean, he's been away from the game for 2 years because of just dumb decisions he made with hotel situations, swearing out crowds, and then getting in contract dispute with the UFC, complaining about fighter pay, getting in their bad side. Like, I'm very concerned about how he's going to look here. I mean, 2 years away from the sport in the prime of your career is a long time. And I'd heard that, you know, he was going to come back as a welterweight, and instead now he's going in there at lightweight against somebody that has about as much heart as anybody in the entire division, maybe in the entire UFC roster. So Iaquinta better be at the top of his game, because Diego Sanchez can surprise people. That being said, if Iaquinta is even at 75% of what he was, he should still be able to win this fight. He should be able to keep the fight standing, and he should be able to outbox Sanchez. And Sanchez did get finished by strikes against Joe Lozon, and I think if that happened, then Iaquinta should be able to finish Sanchez by strikes too. So my pick is going to be Al Iaquinta, but I'm definitely exercising caution here because we just don't know what Iaquinta is going to look like after so much time away. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have Cub Swanson, who is 24-7, taking on Artem Lobov, who is 14-12-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Swanson minus 555, the comeback on Lobov at plus 365. Right now, over five times, it's minus 680 for Swanson. So 555 just wasn't cutting it. And Lobov is now plus 490. So this is a main event we're talking about. And we're seeing a 5-1, 6-1, 7-1 favorite in the main event. Don't ever like to really see that, to be honest with you. And I cannot believe that we're seeing Lobov headline a card in the UFC. This is remarkable to me. So I just scratching my head and wow. I mean, got to give the guy credit for getting to where he is right now. Well, with the help, obviously, of Conor McGregor, that's had a huge impact in his career, just, you know, being associated with him, being his training partner and whatnot. But we can't give Conor all the credit. I mean, let's face it. His win, Lobov's win recently over Ishihara, was a very good win. I mean, a lot of people counted him completely out in that fight. He pushed a high pace. He actually made Ishihara look terrible. So credit to him for having a good performance there. And then he's racked together, you know, a few wins in the UFC now. He's had a couple losses as well. So nothing too crazy, I guess, overall for Lobov. And that's why it's a surprise, because you have a 500 fighter that's headlining a card against one of the better, more well-respected guys at featherweight in Cub Swanson. So I don't know. I mean, to me, it's pretty clear that Swanson has pretty much an advantage everywhere the fight takes place. Lobov, he does like to put a lot of pressure on, pushes forward. He's got heart. He doesn't have any quit. So I respect him as a fighter for sure. I mean, he's not an easy out despite him being a 500 type of fighter, but he should be out of his element here against Swanson. I mean, again, Swanson should be able to have the speed advantage, pick him apart on the feet a little bit. He has to be careful because Lobov can land some hard punches. But outside of that, I don't see Lobov even beating him on the feet. And then on the ground, obviously, Swanson has a huge edge. He's got the wrestling ability. He's got the ability to scramble, take him down. His submission game is better overall as well. So a big discrepancy across the board. I mean, Swanson is definitely the better fighter, and there's no question about it. Now, I mean, they still have to have the fight and play out the way it will. So we don't know how it's exactly going to go, but chances are Swanson comes away with a win and probably inside. I don't expect this to be a 5-round war. I expect this to be maybe a couple rounds, and you know what I mean? We see a finish either way, or, you know, one way or the other. And I think that obviously is going to lean a little bit more towards Swanson. So I don't know. I mean, there's not much more to be said about this fight. I mean, I just think Lobov is severely outclassed against Cub Swanson, and I think we're probably going to see it play out that way as well. So it would be a stunner. And, of course, for the sports books, it'd be a pretty good upset result if I was wrong here. So I won't be too mad if that's the case. But overall, how could you not pick Swanson here, honestly?
Yeah, there's not much to be said. This is one of the more lopsided main events the UFC has ever put on. I mean, granted, yes, Lobov called out Swanson and they made the fight, but you know, you don't have to accept every challenge. Not every challenge makes sense. I mean, Lobov is on a nice little run. He had a great performance against Ishihara, but Ishihara is a powerful striker that's super sloppy and wild. Cub Swanson is, I mean, this guy is nasty. He just went out there and had one of the greatest fights I've ever seen in my life against Duho Choi. And, I mean, that was just a blood and guts, just barn burner from pillar to post. And now he's having a massive step back in terms of competition level. I know that Swanson has had his issues against the guys basically ranked, you know, 1-3 or 1-4 in the division. But, I mean, he definitely should have been taking on somebody at least ranked in this fight. But that being said, Swanson has a 5-inch reach advantage. He's better than Lobov on the ground. I think he's more powerful overall. He's more technical of a striker. And then if it does turn into a brawl, he's shown that he can win those types of fights too. So I really like Swanson here. I mean, Lobov, yeah, he looked really good in his last couple performances, but I mean, those type of fighters just aren't on the same level as Swanson. I would be shocked if Lobov came out and took care of business. I mean, really, he's got a puncher's chance here. Cub Swanson has been knocked out before. But I mean, it was Jose Aldo that put him down back in the WEC. So Swanson's a tough guy. And I think he's going to have his hands full. Lobov's going to have his hands full here. And I expect that Cub Swanson finishes it pretty much however he likes. I mean, this is a kid that out-grappled Dustin Poirier on the ground. He outstruck Duho Choi, and I think that he should win this fight probably by finish inside the first three rounds. So my pick is going to be Cub Swanson. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 108. Our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.